And for more on the shooting at Brown University that happened earlier this month, retired police lieutenant Steve Houck joins us. He's also the host of the Watching Your Six podcast. First off, Steve, thanks a lot for joining us. What are police looking for to help make a connection between this and the what is being called a targeted killing of an MIT professor?
Well, thankfully, as we all know, they located the suspect who, appears at this point was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But early on, it appears that there was a connection made using technology that we refer to. It's common. It's referred to LPR. It's license plate readers. They were able to, from an eyewitness, get a vehicle description early on from Brown University. And then they were able to track that. And these LPRs are used throughout the country, both mobily on police cars, but also stationary on bridges and locations when you enter and you leave states. So it's not uncommon to pick up on that. And if they were able to enter that plate number or that vehicle description into the database, then what would happen is when he passed over into Massachusetts, they would have data to show that the vehicle and dates and times and all that such. And sometimes they can even get a picture of who's driving the vehicle. So it appears that they've got a timeline. And then they also were able to see that vehicle in the area of the MIT professor's home just before he was killed.
Now, for those, obviously, in Florida, we have many people who come in from the Northeast, but for like the native Floridians, how much of a distance is it from Brown University to, let's just say, Massachusetts?
So I think that they're saying that it's like a little over an hour of a drive from where Brown University is to where the professor lived. And it does appear from the timeline that they released during the press conference last night that they believe that after the shooting at Brown, he immediately drove to Massachusetts. So clearly he had a plan. And, you know, a lot of information is coming out about this suspect here that he at least had some level of engineering background. And if you've ever met an engineer, they're problem solvers by nature. That's what they do. They don't see a problem. They see solutions. So I suspected, to be quite honest with you, it would take some time to catch him because most people, especially suspects in crimes like this, usually will think one or two layers out from an incident. Engineers are the type of people that think three and four and five layers ahead. It doesn't appear that he thought that far ahead. Maybe this was his plan all along because he did rent the storage unit in November that he was. He wasn't found in his actual storage unit. He was found in the one next to it. But he invented that in November clearly as a plan to be a part of this whole scheme that he had going. So this was obviously thought out at least, as far back as November. Who knows, maybe even further back.
Do you know if there were any mistakes that were made in the investigation?
Well, that's the tricky part. And one of the things that was a little dismaying last night, and I watched the press conference, and it was quite lengthy last night. And during that, they had the Brown University police chief. And one of the questions that was asked was, were there any mistakes made along the way? And how do you plan to fix those? And his response was a little bit disappointing. What I did expect him to say was, they would do an after-action report, we refer to as an AAR. And essentially what that is a top-to-bottom review of all the things that happened and all the policies and the processes that went into an incident to see if there's any mistakes. Very rarely do you ever have a perfect execution. Even if you have plans in place, is it perfectly executed? He never mentioned that. He essentially brushed off the matter, and it was pretty disappointing, in my opinion, because you can't just accept something like that as, well, they just happen. There was a lot of things from what I'm hearing that on the weekends, you didn't need a swipe card to get into those buildings, so anybody could enter. The man who ended up coming forward and giving them information, the witness, more information is coming out about today, but he was also a Brown University graduate, but he was at the time homeless, living in the basement of this building. So clearly, to have a homeless person living in the building, their security is not exactly tight. So In a neighborhood like this, in a smaller camp, you worry about people, you know, we refer to it as open campus. People can walk on and off it. So you have to have a little bit tighter security. So whether it could have been prevented or not, I think what a lot of people are looking at now is, could they have done more initially early on to identify and locate this person and perhaps have prevented the MIT professor from being killed? I don't know that they'll ever really get a clear answer to that, but I think the criticism is well-founded. I think you have to, a lot of times in these instances, you have to look internally, and you can't just be defensive as an organization. You have to look at yourself honestly and say, could we do it better next time?
We've seen this earlier with the Charlie Kirk assassination. The suspected gunman wasn't caught immediately. They were caught days later. We're seeing now with the suspected gunman for the Brown shooting and possibly the targeted MIT killing of the professor, killing the MIT professor. Are shooters like this getting a little bit more sophisticated? Because it seemed like before, when shootings happened, the gunmen or alleged gunmen were caught almost immediately.
Right, and that is a bit of almost the society as a whole. We all know with news, we consume a lot of news as a country, and we generally, because of maybe the way we've changed, whether it be television or the internet, is we want things quickly. We want things resolved quickly. But on top of that, is a lot of the things that law enforcement have used in the past that we never really shared a lot is now shared very openly. So suspects know that. For a perfect example is, in this particular case, within the law enforcement circle, since cell phones have been around, we have used cell phones to track people's movements. In this particular case, he clearly thought that through, and he was using encrypted SIM cards from Europe. That were untraceable. So they were unable to do that. So clearly he thought that through, and he was changing out SIM cards to not be tracked. He changed out the license plate from a Maine to a Florida and back so that the LPRs, it tricked the LPRs. So he clearly was aware of some techniques that law enforcement use and was trying to evade. Why he ended up where he ended up is difficult to understand. I expected, to be quite honest with you, that he had plenty of opportunities to flee the general area and didn't. I don't know why. Maybe they'll learn that as time goes on. But that's part of the problem. The way I see it is, and I understand the desire for people to want to know and to understand it. But there are things in law enforcement that we do try to keep close to the vest because there are techniques that we use. And if people are aware of those techniques, it makes it much harder to track these people. So early on is the most important part. I think a setback here in this particular case was they took two people into custody. Both of them turned out to be not their suspect. And I know last night they explained that they continued with their investigation, which they very well may have. But what does happen is a lot of times in these cases, witnesses, when they see, oh, they caught the guy, they don't come forward because they figure, hey, if I don't have to put my name into this, I won't. And maybe I saw something or maybe I didn't. So by having a swing and a miss a couple of times, I think it perhaps would keep people from stepping up and saying, hey, I might be able to help you. I recognize that guy or whatever the case may be. So that is, I'd like to see more as the days come on, how they got turned on to these people and why they actually even named them publicly as having been taken into custody, because I do think that perhaps slowed down the process.
Before I let you go, what are some final thoughts that you have on this investigation as a whole?
Well, the investigation, I think that it got better as it went along. I think the federal government being involved, a whole of government approach, helped. I think that Providence was a bit in over their head, at least from some of the press conferences I've seen. And then the press conferences, we could talk for hours about all those press conferences. They were not well done. Last night's, I would say, was one of their better ones. But, in my background, both in law enforcement, and I ran our criminal investigation division, but I was also the public information officer, so I'm well aware of of how these things are portrayed to the public, each of their press conferences were worse than the next. And that doesn't instill a lot of confidence in people and, you know, getting information out. And crisis communication is a very difficult technique, and it takes a lot of years to manage that. And I think they'd be well suited to do a full top-to-bottom review of all the things that they did, including their media engagement and their public engagement, because I think they have a lot to learn and a lot of areas to improve on.
He is retired police lieutenant and host of the Watching Your Six podcast. Steve Houck, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me.